first time I ever had a picture. Well, I didn't print it, but give me the idea.
Okay, so the goal of the shirt today is really just to have you guys read together, and occasionally I will perhaps point out things about what you're reading. Okay, good. So why don't we,
recording over.
Okay. Miriam, why don't you start reading the Elsha and explaining to us what's going on?
Starting from the question?
Starting from the question.
Should I start from the title, or?
Good.
Which is a typo. Not mem gimel.
Daf.
Mem gimel.
Mem gimel. So it is a typo, yes. Okay, good.
Tanan hatam, dimut tsurot levan od haya lo l'rabban gamliel v'chulei, umishari v'haktiv v'chulei. So we start with the braisa that Rabban Gamliel had these figures of shapes of moons, and then we had the question of Mishari based on the Pasuk, the Chulei.
And what's the limit from the Pasuk that the question is from?
Lo tasun iti lo tasun bidu shamashai.
And it ends at shamashai? Shamashai, I'm a shamashin lefanai here. Probably easier if you have it.
Yes.
If you have it on the opposite side. Okay, right, so the Gemara begins with the story of Rabban Gamliel, the Mishnah Rishon on Rabban Gamliel, and the claim that this violates the pasuk of Shamashim, Hamishamashim Lefanai, which assumes that the Levana must be a Shamash Hamishamash Lefanai. Right? Okay, good.
Oila Ha'ir. Shemikara Habilu Lakshu Mibraita Batrei Demekshay Begmara Tanya Lo Tasun Iti Lo Tasun Gmut Shamashai Hamishamashim Lefanai Bamarom Kigon Chamal Vanakh Bemazalot.
Go on.
Dlo haya makom l'chol hani tiutzei, k'dila kaman, dlo ashkach tiutzei, ela achirim asu'o.
Okay, so what does that mean?
So originally, they should have asked him the question from the last braitza of lo tasun iti, lo tasun shamashayim shimulfam mamarom k'il chamal v'na, and they didn't have to have all these intermediary answers. And we wouldn't have needed those answers, and we would have just gone to the El Echirim Asulo.
Or alternatively, Olafachot
HaKushia Sheini. Atanya lo tasun b'dimut shamshim b'marom, habele lak shui b'resha. V'lo mekaimet de'ein...
Mekamaita.
Thank you. De'ein nizkar b'marom, v'lo hayam akom l'mar tiru t'arishon. Or they could have at least skipped the first question of hamishamshim l'fanai, and just gone to the second braisa with Hamisham Shemloth Naiba Marom, and we wouldn't have had to bother to bring the first one, which doesn't mention Bamarom.
So why is it better to ask from the second one than the first one?
Because we wouldn't have. I mean, the second one is more direct. Is a better question on Rabban Gamliel.
Second one is a better question on Rabban Gamliel because.
Because it's referring to Bamarom, which is what Rabban Gamliel was doing, whereas there was a very easy answer for the first question.
Is it in fact that Rabban Gamliel is Bamarom? Is that kind of everybody? Is Rabban Gamliel Bamarom? Is Levana necessarily Bamarom?
I guess more so than the general.
The first question.
I mean, yes. Even if you're going to say Levana is not, Bamarom doesn't apply to Levana, whatever Bamarom applies to, you could have equally said as an answer to the first question.
Whatever Bamarom applies to.
If you're going
to
say the braisa about Bamarom,
right,
doesn't apply to Levana, whatever it applies to, the first braisa can certainly apply to, because it's more general.
Whatever it applies to, the first braisa, I think that. What does the Alshich think? The advantage of the second braita would be for asking the question. It's not that it's more general, right? It's a very specific thing that you gain by asking the question on the second braita as opposed to the first.
What does he gain? Mm-hmm. He's making a structural point. He's talking about order. Right? Well, if you ask the question on the second braita, then you could not make the claim of Esther Radabai's answer of
only Efshar Lasot Kamotan, because there are no Shamashim Bamarom, Shefshar Lasot Kamotan. So it doesn't matter whether it refers to, it just gets the first answer. You could have given a different answer, which is, when we said Shamashim Bamarom, we only meant Malachim, we only meant Mador Elyon and not Mador Tachton, right, which we're going to try, but you couldn't have given the answer of Shefshar Lasot Kamotan. So the overarching argument that he makes is that Abaye's first answer, which is Lo Esra, right, which is Lo Esra Torah El Shamashim Shefshar Lasot Kimotan, is not an answer that is that can survive the second and third brightos. Right? Abaye's first attempt, right? Right, Lo Esra Torah El Shamashim Shefshar Lasot Kimotan, it's not an answer that can survive the second and third brightos.
Okay.
It doesn't work because clearly there are things that are forbidden. Now, what is the assumption of that? What's the problem with that? So, Abaye gave the first answer, and the first answer doesn't survive the second and third kushes. Duh.
So right now it makes it look like Raman Gamliel was doing.
What's wrong? If the Gemara, this gets to the conversation we had yesterday. If the Gemara.
Question is in the end of the day, what's
Usher? That's a practical question, but why does it bother the Al-Sheikh? Why didn't Abaye know those brightos? One possibly what bothers him is...
Why didn't the Maksha use them?
Or why didn't the Maksha use them? Okay, why didn't Abaye know those brightos is, right, the problem that we assume Amorayim, if we assume Amorayim to be omniscient, so then you should never be able to kasha on an Amorah. If you assume that Amorayim know all brightos, so then the whole concept of Akasha is irrelevant, right? Is always a fake.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
well,
that's
the
not
concept of Akasha is asking for that Amorah's justification.
Asking that Amorah's justification, yes. But that's not what the Al-Sheikh says. The Al-Sheikh says, right, he says he should have asked the question from, right? So his assumption is that the Maksha knows all the brightos. Right? Meaning that he is not reading the Sugi as, right, at some point, the Al-Sheikh does not read the Sugi as a live dialogue. Right, in which sequentially people discover, right, more information.
It's just two characters, and it's happening all at once.
Yes, so he assumes the author, whether he makes the choice in live dialogue with Abaye or he makes the choice literarily later, right, he assumes that the author of the sugya has all the information available to them, and therefore the order of presentation is a pedagogic choice. Or a stylistic choice, and not simply, right, and this is not the verbatim notes of the Shia. Right? So it's his first question. He doesn't understand why somebody would have allowed Abaye to give the first teretz when they knew, right, and left Abaye open, right, to giving the first teretz if the first teretz isn't going to make it anyway. Okay, then what's his second question?
So with the favorite tabet, how do they name our Ella?
So what does that mean?
So with the second answer, with the second thing that it should have said Ella Amar Abaye, because Abaye is presumably changing his opinion.
Where should it have said Ella Amar Abaye?
Over here.
Right, before Lo Esra Torah, yeah. Ella Bidmut Dalat Panim Bahadeh Adadi.
Yeah.
Right, so if we read the structure that we have Rabban Gamliel, Abaye gives a teretz for Rabban Gamliel. Right, he's saying, how could Rabban Gamliel have had the son? Rabban Gamliel could have had a picture of the moon, because the moon is a shamash Efshar Lasot Kimotan. The answer is that's not true, because, right, Efshar Lasot Kimotan is not a good enough answer. So Abaye says no. The boundary is that, well, we don't know what Abaye thinks about shamashim Efshar Lasot Kimotan anymore, but among shamashim Efshar Lasot Kimotan, the only thing that's usher is the Arba Chayot. Okay, so let's point out the presumption of this question. The presumption of this question is that what is the purpose of Abaye's statement?
The second one.
To defend Rabban Gamliel.
Yeah. The presumption of this question is that all of Abaye's statements, or at least the first two, are intended and stated as answers to as attempts to reconcile Rabban Gamliel and the Braita, such that if Abaye's first answer fails to justify Rabban Gamliel, he should replace it. The alternative is that Abaye made his statements as comments on these Braitos, right, and the Gemara is just how the Gemara introduces them in the context of apparent conflicts between Rambam Gamliel and those brides, in which case there's no reason for Abaye to say Ella, because Abaye's statements are independently worthwhile halachically, and he never intended them as tirutzim.
But don't some of them contradict each other?
Depends on what context you think, right? If they contradict each other, if you treat them as universal statements,
right?
Right.
So that's what you were just.
Right, but if you treat them as statements that are comments on the Braita directly,
right?
Then another issue comes up, right? So the Al-Sheikh, first assumption is that the conversation is deliberately constructed as opposed to live. And his second assumption is part of the same thing, that Abaye is part of the conversation. Right? Neither of which we could claim that the conversation is Abaye and lots of people, and we get rid of the first question. We could claim that Abaye was never part of the conversation, but everything is constructed, we would have no problem with the second. Okay. Let's do one more. What's the third question? So what do you understand as that question?
So why does he bring the answer of El B'dmut Dalad Panim when, I mean, there are clearly much more than Dalad Chayot is in Mishnah.
Why does he bring the answer? Is it a function of the sugya? What is this question really?
Why does Abaye understand the Braitha that way?
Why does Abaye understand the Braitha that way? Because it's better, right? In other words, right, this is a substance, right? Up to now he's been asking literary questions, right? Mm-hmm. Formal questions. Now he's asking a substantive question. Right? What sense does this make? Right? Why should the Torah ban only the Dalet Panim? Is it really true that those are the only four images in heaven? Okay, now let's talk about the presumption of that. How many forms are there in heaven? You don't know.
Do you want a number?
Well, so we have to be careful about
how many forms are there in heaven that are independent of the four that we just heard?
Yeah, so we have to be careful of answers. What do you want to say?
I would say none. They take on a form for the Navi. I would doubt that they would.
Okay, good. Maybe, right, this, to some degree, this is a version of the very meaningful question, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? Mm-hmm. You'll understand why this is a meaningful question. What are the two possibilities?
None or infinite.
Well, none and infinite is one. There really are three possibilities. Okay. None, finite, and infinite. Uh-huh. Nobody cares. If the number is finite, nobody cares what the number is.
Right.
Right? The question is, do angels occupy mm-hmm. space?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or really two. Do angels intrude into space? And if they intrude into space, do they occupy space? You can metaphysicalize angels, in which case they have the answer is zero because they don't incur it in space.
Right.
You can treat angels as interposing into our space but not occupying it, in which case it's infinite. Or you can somehow say that angels have a physical presence which is measurable. Right. Nobody was debating 16 or 32.
And if you don't believe in angels, then the answer is in terms of I.
The answer is what?
In terms of I.
Okay, good. Imaginary, yeah, good. Okay, but I want to get ready. Nobody ever debated, right? This is part of the thing that we should always take people seriously. Serious people ask serious questions. If lots of smart people spend time asking that question, there must be a basis to that question. That's what it was. The question is: is it finite or infinite? Okay, so we have what you to answer is that there are no forms. Mm-hmm. Right, and some of you answer that they're infinite forms.
Right, infinite forms that just take up this space.
Right, so now
maybe they're a finite number of forms.
Right, So now Abaye says the Al-Sheikh seems to have this peculiar claim. Not only is there a finite number of forms, but he's telling you the number. Right. He's telling you the number. There are four. Right. What is that? Right. Where does that come from? Now, what's the answer? What's the answer to that question? Why does Abaye pick four?
Right.
Yes. So now, the real question is, what is the Al-Sheikh thinking? Right. Who cares how many chayot are in heaven? All we care about are the ones that are recorded in Navi. Right? Unless you think that chayot really have forms. Right? There are only two ways he can ask this question. Either he thinks that chayot really have forms, and so it should be prohibited to make forms like the real forms of the angels, mm-hmm. or he should be quoting us psukim. which record images other than the four forms.
Okay, right. I mean, you don't think he's working with... Right, the Al-Sheikh lives in Sfat.
Okay, yeah.
Did he? No. No, I think, right, like, if he was in a place that had sort of a strong mystical tradition, right, then it could be that he has a whole, right, set of, right, he has a whole set of Masora about what kinds of angels they are and what they look like and what their significance is, and, right, that's not really coming into play here so much, but it's definitely that there are more than...
Very good. Yeah. So he may have access outside, right, he may have access outside Navi to other visions of angels. So that he doesn't have to take Yehuda's position that that they're infinite, right? And he, right? But he can actually say, look, I know there is a finite number, right? But I have a much larger finite number, right? Everyone knows it. Everyone knows that. I only know this because of this truly horrible novel I once read, which I read through all 1,000 pages on the assumption that nobody could write 900 pages like this. I didn't have anything to say, but it turned out. but much of this novel was just visual descriptions of angels as they appear in Kabbalistic literature.
It was a novel.
Yeah, it was a Holocaust novel, no less. And many conversations in the heavenly court, which required describing all the angels who came in. But there are descriptions in all.
It was Milton.
Descriptions in Chazal. Alibi. No. It was, the famous line of Samuel Johnson's line about Paradise Lost was no man ever wished it longer. But at least you're glad you read it when you're done. No, unless I missed it. Sometimes there are things that I read and I don't get it all, and somebody else tells me I don't get Last of the Just, and some people think it's one of the greatest novels ever, and I just don't get it. Read it. I was like, why did anyone read this? I don't know. So maybe I just have a, there's certain, I can't read certain kinds of Holocaust novels. I have trouble with certain kinds of black female writers. Could be. I don't get Toni Morrison either. Can't read Alice Walker. Okay. So I think it's very plausible. I think Aditya's suggestion is very plausible that the Al-Sheikh is working in a tradition in which angels appear to human beings with specific forms, and more than the forms in Yecheskel, although it'd be great if somebody had a pasuk outside of Yecheskel, or a Dmud Adam, which you can talk about there, and maybe you can come up with that. Although he seems to sound, V'chi'en v'rom el'dal chayot, without a specific pasuk, sound like this. Everyone knows there are lots of forms.
Well, even if we don't have specific forms, we have the Ofanim, and we have the Srafim, and at least his mention as being distinct.
That's true also, but I don't know how we would know what to ban then.
We know what Sephim look like.
If we have no idea what a seraph or an ofan looks like.
Well, the ofanim are also described.
They are.
In Yechezkel, the same vision.
Right. But if it's described as something that's like very amorphous, that it's like not very concrete, and you try to make a picture of it, that seems very, very wrong, because it's a farce. You're making up something. It's your imagination, and we have no idea what it is. It's a lie. It's completely a lie.
So he
tells her to make a lie?
Yes. Because you're giving someone a very wrong image in their head that's not... It's not a lie.
It's an unsubstantiated claim.
But
more
it's like
specifically.
Definitely.
Meaning
well,
if you know what it looks like and you deliberately misrepresent
right,
it, that's not
lie.
What you're talking. That's a lie.
Right.
But we're talking about something. Right,
well, it's definitely wrong anyway.
Well,
why is it definitely
wrong?
But
not for this pasuk. This pasuk, right? The pasuk seems to say you can't do things that are accurate because you can't do things that are accurate. And now you're telling me it's a different drashot. You can't do things that are inaccurate. Right? But those are opposite drashot.
No, because it's your imagination. I mean, because we also don't believe that they really have corporal manifestations.
Yeah.
So you're giving it a corporal manifestation, which is a farce.
But if I get it right, I do the Dalet Chayot.
No, but we know we have a corporal manifestation of the Chayot.
Which is good, it's a farce.
So you're banning Shamashim Sheh Sharla Sot Kimotan if you do it right, and Sheh Sharla Sot Kimotan because you can't do it right.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe I will end up there. That's okay. Maybe we'll end up there.
Well, no, I mean, there's just something that seems very wrong about doing something that's going to definitely be a lie. And it would just be... And also it would get, like, people very... anyone else who sees it, who doesn't know what you were thinking when you created it would get them very confused.
So this is put a big sign on his thing. This is just my imagination.
I mean, why would it be worse to do something that's 99.99999% a lie, which is what you're saying, than something that's 100% a lie, which is something that you know what it looks like and you deliberately misrepresent it?
Well, that's also wrong.
So it's
not really
like
a lie.
Well, fine, we're
going
to be looking through there, and the Al-Sheikh seems to think that that's better.
No, but because everyone knows, like, you mean like a dog without an ear?
Yeah.
Well, because everyone knows what a dog looks like.
Okay.
All right, let's hold on, because now we're getting answers. I just want to get his question. His question, what I'm suggesting, I think Idita is right, his question assumes that there are other forms of chayot that we know. Right, I think that's what his question
but
is.
But not these?
Which are not the dog of chayot, right? There are other forms of chayot. It doesn't make any sense to ban these four, because if we're banning the forms of chayot, we should ban all the others too.
I see. Okay.
Right. That's what the premise of this question seems to be, right? That we are aware of more than these four forms. So he doesn't understand why these four forms specifically. Picking these four forms is like saying 16 angels to him.
But then that doesn't seem to correlate with what comes after Elam Atapar Tufa Dam Lachudia. Like that.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. We're going order.
Okay,
we're going
okay,
order.
Okay.
Right. So his first question is he doesn't understand why the sugya is structured in such a way that lets Abaye give an answer which won't survive. Right? Why not give Abaye the evidence up front so he knows not to give a false answer? His second question assumes that Abaye is in this conversation for the sake of saving Rabban Gamliel, in which case, when an answer fails to save Rabban Gamliel, even though the answer is not thereby made false, right? It's just false. As an answer to Rabban Gamliel, Abaye should say Ella, and he doesn't. His third is on the substance. He doesn't understand he doesn't understand how Abaye could say the four chayot specific.
Wait, hold on. The Ella question.
Yeah.
That can't be in terms of not that Abaye is coming to explain Rabban Gamliel, but that Abaye is coming to explain the pasuk. Because the first verse that Abaye brings, we could say that he agrees with that in theory, but he doesn't. But when he dismisses that and comes with the other thing, he doesn't think that that's what the pasuk means. And then when the Makasha brings the Braisa on the Pasuk by saying, okay, so that must mean Dalet Panim, but it can't, the Pasuk couldn't have meant the first
one. Okay, very good, right? So Mir says, maybe I'm overstating, because Abaye could be an Ella even if the Rabban Gamliel never happens. Right? Because Abaye could be an Ella if we see Abaye as engaged in interpreting the Pasuk directly.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so really, I gave two options, which are one is Abaye trying to save Rabban Gamliel, and the other is Abaye trying to interpret the Braisa. Right? And Miriam says it's an in-between position, which is that Abaye is directly on the Pasuk, in which case we could also put Ella in, and the Mielsh's question still stands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Excellent. Okay, now, Adina, why don't you take over? Revoed Mehechatesi.
Okay, Mehechatesi, the Tzarif, Arbaf Hertzuzin, the Hadi Hadidi. And from the way he said it, it sounds like you need them to be all together.
Right.
Which is weird.
So what's the question?
What about each one by themselves?
What's wrong with each one? What's wrong with Abaye banning all four together?
Because we know from other Gemaras that a person by itself is forbidden.
You know, other Gemaras, we have the Gemara here later.
Right.
So it's only the person that bothers him? He's not bothered by requiring the ox to be together with the eagle?
But that's just weird. It's just so specific.
Yeah? Why not?
Well, what's the point of banning something if it's, if we're talking, like, because it seemed that he was saying, like, a plow.
Yeah.
But
right.
It turns out not to be a plow.
Well, that's indeed, but right now, right, what does Mehechatesi, right, what does Mehechatesi mean?
That from here, it's,
so where do you get it from?
Where do you get it from? Mehechatesi means, there's a default, Mehechatesi means there's a default setting, and you are changing the default setting without justification. So the default setting is you should ban each of these individually. And right, and he's saying, you, what gives you the idea that you can, right, why do you think that you should ban them all together as opposed to each of them independently? You can't say because of the person separately, because that's the question the Gemara actually asks. Right, so what assumption does the Al-Sheikh have to make the default setting that each of them should be asur individually? So each of them is one of the chayot.
Or is an individual angelic figure.
each of them is an individual figure. Okay, it could be. Have to go back and look at Yeheskel and see which is the most plausible shot. Okay, I'm going to bracket that one for now.
Assuming Yeheskel is bothering him or not. Right back to you, did just...
No, we
just
show you, yeah.
We don't know his Kabbalistic. I mean,
right.
Well, we do, but...
Could also be that, right, could also...
No, he's from the world of Yeheskel, so we sort of do know his Kabbalistic.
Right, so it could be that he knows that there is.
He was a big Michalik on the Yeheskel Sefer, we just don't know.
Yeah. He also writes Kabbalistic works, so you can actually figure it out.
Yeah, so it could be that here again...
You can ask him. He'll tell us exactly what this Auschwitz was.
Right, so very likely it could be here again that he's just working with his own... presupposition. This is valuable to know, right? That how you read these Gemaras depends to some degree on what your presumptions are. Right? Mm-hmm. So he knows certain things about angels. Right? If we walk in, let's say, believing that angels cannot have corporeal form, mm-hmm. So we'll also have certain things that are plausible in the Gemara and certain things that are not plausible in the Gemara. Unless we might be more willing to distance ourselves and say the Gemara said X, but you can understand why that would be theologically problematic. We're all much happier assuming the Gemara shares our theological beliefs.
This question could also not be on his assumptions about angels, but about the language of the Brisa.
Right, that's what I thought.
It could also be, right, the language of the Brisa is, because you think the Brisa says, right, the Brisa says, Demut Shimshi HaMashamshin Lefanai B'Marom.
To him that somehow implies, I don't know why, but, I mean...
Okay, it's not indefensible, but you'll have to figure out why eventually.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In order to defend that, you'll have to explain why right, that would be. Mm-hmm. Okay. Athena, one more. So what's just happened here, right? So before the Gam Kinema, right? What's his question, right? The Gam is a.
Abai here. What he says contradicts what he said before. Well, no, contradicts the Brita.
Yeah? Which Brita?
The one that says all the stuff in the Marom is, all the smashing are forbidden.
That one? Right. No, which Brita? Which Brita is it? Right? Which Brita, what did he say? The Brita?
The one about the stuff of that in that Beit HaNegev thing.
Good. Now, what's wrong with the Baya contradicting that Brisa, as opposed to the one that we asked the question from?
Did he propose this?
Abai, we know Abai's going to contradict the next Brisa. That's why we're asking the question on him.
Right.
So why do we care?
Well, he said that that one was the answer.
Because that Brisa was cited as supportive of Abai previously, and so we have to assume that the Kid Etanya is not an editor.
We assume it's him.
We assume that it's Abai, right? We assume that it's Abai bringing that Brita, therefore he has to have known this Brita,
right. Even
he doesn't have to have known the next one.
Okay.
Right, but if we assume that Kidatanya is the editor inserting it, then we have no problem at all. Right, so
Well, then the editor wouldn't have put it in there.
Why not? Just telling you, look, this is defensible. Right. Right, this is where you might have thought this, right? Right, the Al-Sheikh assumes that the Kid Etanya is Abaye, right? Mm-hmm. So these questions are presuming. What I'm trying to get is that these questions presume a very particular editorial, right? Very particular editorial assumptions, and one of the ways to adapt your read of the sugya is to change the editorial assumptions. Right, he assumes that Abaye doesn't know the Brita that are quoted later, but he knows even the Brita that are tangential previously. Okay, good. Onward. When Abaye says the Torah only bans the Dalat Panim, he contradicts the Brita about the Tavli Heichal. Why does he contradict that?
Because he said, because that Brita says that the only thing that's forbidden is the Tavli Heichal.
That Brita say anything about only?
No, it's not only. It's
good, so now what's the contradiction? The Brita doesn't say only.
So,
no, but
now...
Abai interprets the Brita saying only? That's what he said originally, but now he's changed his mind. So why is he contradicting that Brita now?
Well, because now he's saying Lo Asra Torah Ella.
Because now, because the Al-Sheikh reads Abai when he says Lo Asra Torah Ella Panim Bahadei Dare as if Abai said Ella. So the Abaye has now abandoned the answer of Shamashimashav Sharlah Sotkin Motan, and now he says the only thing which is banned is Dalet Panim, and therefore, he says, how can Abaye now claim that the only thing which is written is Dalet Panim? Of course Abaye has to agree that the Meitz HaMikdash is Asur. Right, so the assumption here is that when Abaye says Lo Asra Ella, he's not saying within the confines of the Bright that you just asked me, he's making an absolute claim.
That's the assumption for the Al-Sheikh to be.
That's the assumption for the Al-Sheikh to make this.
I mean, this seems like the simplest understanding of Abaye.
Good.
You're assuming he's making a halachic statement or an exegetical one?
He's assuming that Abaye's statement, Lo Asra Torah Ella, right, is a halachic statement.
And the only thing that's Asra, that's the only thing that's from the Pasuk.
The only thing that's Asra.
Look at the Al-Sheikh.
Yeah.
It's not clear to me he's making a halachic statement, and not that how right. You could read Lo Asra Ella, meaning this pasuk is only osir, and you've already said exegetically, right? As long as he reads the first brisa as Kiddetanya, as Abaye citing this brisa as an interpretation of this drasha.
Well, right? So let's read the second half of Abaye's question. Right, it says the gam ki name of the Hadra be Abaye. Even if you were to say that Abaye changes the halachic position, right? It says still. Kashu Breita to Hadari. So Abaye is at the very least is interpreting this Breita as making that claim, right? And then the Breita contradict each other.
Right. We'll have a Mishamchen. V'lo mehai karnafki.
But doesn't it also...
Right, yes, right. Okay,
bye.
But wouldn't it also fit in if we went with the assumption that Abaye, that this was a live conversation and Abaye was constantly trying to defend Rabban Gamliel, that therefore we could say that it makes sense Lo Asra Torah Ela Bizmut Da'apanim because he is refuting his last proof which failed.
That's true, but he still has to account, right? He still has to account with the previous Breita, right? He has to know all the evidence that went previously.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Okay, one more, Dina.
Actually, yeah. he still may be making an exegetical claim, just rejecting it based on Rashi, right? Meaning, and saying, right, he can't say that he accepts the Breita if he doesn't accept the exegetical move, because Rashi said that is the exegetical move.
Yeah, he could also reject...
Right, he rejected Rashi's assumption, right? I mean, he assumes that that has to be what's happening. It's more likely he's making a halachic claim, but he could also make an exegetical claim.
I suppose. It's really compelling, though, because Rashi says Shema... Abaye says Shema Shem, so you don't really need Rashi so much to call.
Right, and yet he quotes...
Yeah,
right,
okay, I agree. okay, one more, Adina.
Okay,
Alright, so what did Lamed Lamed mean?
The Lulema.
Okay, not bad. Not bad. It's the same. It means you can't say it. It's the Leika Lamemar.
Oh, the Leika Lamemar. Okay.
Okay, good. So can you just do the next one?
Okay. Ve'od lahai teirutza derav Yehuda lo tasun oti breita de'akshu mine le'el lo tasun demut chamshei b'meron hikim teirut.
Okay, so what is he saying there?
So Rav Yehuda comes in support of Abaye, and he brings this drash that lo tasun oti meaning is right, so you can't make. That's Lotasun Iti, Lotasun Oti, which is a demut of the Mishamshin in the Marom.
Right.
Which... Right, so how is that... So he's asking how is that a support, because it's still what's in the Marom, but is the demut.
Nope, not enough. Let's start. All right. Someone else want to try? All at once. Let's read it together again, right? Oh, l'hai terutu d'ravira l'otasun oti b'raita d'akshimei l'el l'otasun d'vut shamashi b'marom shamashai b'marom heichem
itarza. So it doesn't answer the original question.
Where does the bright Shamashim and Ibn Maron show up?
Before Abaye's answer about Dalet Panim.
No, it's after.
No.
That's before.
Right.
Before.
It's before, okay.
Oh, but Rabbi Yehuda comes after.
Rabbi Yehuda comes after that, good. So now what's his problem?
So Rabbi Yehuda could explain Partzuf Adam
because of
in light of... Oh, no, mind.
So he's just repeating. Why is it just being repeated?
Why?
How is it answering the question?
How is who answering what question?
It seems like it's saying that the Parsuf Adam would go with the Brita Lotestun Oti, the Drasha on it, as opposed to the Bama Rome.
Well, if Rabbi Yehuda is saying Aval Shar Shamshin Shari, everything else is allowed, then we still have the question of Lotestun Oti, Lotestun Kedmut Shamshin Shamshin Shamshin.
How do we square Rabbi Yehuda's claim that only Parsuf Adam is forbidden with the previous Brita?
Right.
That
it's
says
just an alternative drasha. It hasn't offered us a way out of the initial drasha.
It's not. It's worse. It contradicts the brisa.
Sure.
Well, only if we're assuming it's.
Well, it's different as the brisa itself.
Assuming this is the only drasha that you're learning from this pasuk, right, it undermines right, original problem was
yeah.
You can't read Shamashai is referring to the kalim because that's not Bamarom, but neither is this. And this assumes this is not an alternative drasha. It's the drasha of pasuk, and we come back to the exact same problem.
Well, let's follow the structure, right? So the Gemara, right? So you have to Abaye's initial attempt to solve Rav Gamliel on the pasuk is to claim that the pasuk only bans the Beit Hamikdash because anything which we can't actually copy,
mm-hmm.
right, is mutter.
Mm-hmm.
Gemara says that can't be because there are things b'marom,
mm-hmm.
right, which we're not assuming right now is the sun, the moon, and the stars, but there are things b'marom and nothing b'marom is copyable, which are nonetheless usher. So then Abaye says, no, right, the only things that are banned, or at least among the things that are Bamarom, the only things that are banned are the Dalet Panim Abadi Adari. So Gemara says, okay, so then any of the four Panim, including the human face separately, must be Mutter. Chavita says, no, there's a separate Drasha, but that separate, right, which bans the human being, but...
Mm-hmm.
If Rabbi's drasha contradicts the previous brayta, then we could just answer that. Abaye could just say, "I don't hold like," right? Instead of giving his new answer, I don't right. I only hold the Dalet Panim Arasur. Rabbi should just say, "I hold like Rabbi Yehuda. There is no Isra on Shamshem and Shamshem Lefanai Bamarom. It's only Isra on human beings." Right. So the fact that right. So the Gemara presents it as if Abaye accepts the authority of the previous brayta, and says, in addition. So the authority, right, in addition to the authority, but the way I get out of the contradiction from Gamliel in the previous Brita is by the Dalet Panim. And then Rabbi says, in addition to the Dalet Panim, I also tell you there's another drasha which bans the human being. But that drasha doesn't fit the Brita's authority already accepted. You can't have them both. Okay? So on the assumption that, again, Abaye accepts all the evidence that is thrown against him, he wants to understand that allowing Rabbi Yehuda in, right, seems to reject that brayta. And the only reason we quoted Rabbi Yehuda was to try and find a way for Abaye to fit with that brayta.
You're saying that the assumption is that, right, the Midrash of Rabbi Yehoshua is coming not in order to give an alternative to the previous brayta, but is rather coming to actually give Abaye out on the Partzuf Adam.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, so I should have indented it, right? Right, is the bottom line in the Gemara, according to the Alshich's question.
If that's the case, it doesn't make sense.
Yes.
But it right. I mean, but then you could just say, well, actually, it's coming as an answer to the previous brayta.
Absolutely right.
If you read
Rabbi Yehoshua as an alternate to Abaye.
Yeah.
As opposed to as a defense of Abaye.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then this problem goes away. But then it should say Ella. So what the Alshich is doing is indenting that part of the conversation. He's saying that Rabbi Yehoshua is there, is there on the assumption that Abaye is correct. He's a way of restoring Abaye, and he's not an alternative approach to the he's not an alternative teretz for Rabban Gamliel. Okay, but again, for each of these, I don't care. But I just want to point out the way in which every question assumes a certain reading,
mm-hmm.
right? And you can reject that reading and come with an answer, but you have to, but you have to make choices, right? You can't just do it conceptually.
Couldn't you read the Al-Sheikh as saying as actually having the other premise that this brighta was actually meant as an alternative brighta, and his problem was just that we have to assume that all brightas have to be consistent with each other.
Why should we assume all brightas be consistent? He knows about machloket. He knows about machloket. I don't think that would bother him. I don't think he would assume that. I think it's pretty clear that he thinks that the problem is that how would you answer that brayta? If you just say it's machlok, you don't need to answer that brayta.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that we try to answer that brayta. Okay. Right. Why don't we switch to Emily?
Oh gosh. Okay. Are we up to the Gemara one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The old Gemara, the Parichlei, Ushaar Shmashin Mishare. Umakshale mi breitha de ofanim vechule amai lo akshale mi breitha de el.
So what's his question?
So why didn't it bring the kashya on the previous, from the previous breitha?
Which previous breitha?
The
The Breite of Bamarom. Doesn't this Breite say Bamarom? But you're right. Right. The previous Breite ended at Bamarom.
Right.
Okay, so what he wants to know is why is it necessary to introduce the details of Afanim, Strafim, V'chayot HaKodesh right here, as opposed to elsewhere. Right. So his assumption is, he's clearly not assuming that the editor is fooling you, that the editor knows what the Breita really says at the end, and he only asked you half the Breita, right? And then he quoted the end right at the end, because he's just right. He's assuming that there are two separate Breitot. The editor is familiar with both Breitot and quotes them as needed, and therefore the editor must have, if the editor introduces a new Breita, it must be because this question requires the information of the new Breita as opposed to the previous one. And he doesn't understand because if we read Rabbi Yeshua's statement as saying that the only shamash that is forbidden is lo tasunoti,
mm-hmm.
then any Breita that bans shar shamashim should be enough, right?
Right.
Still
it should be redundant with his previous question.
Redundant?
Well, I mean, his previous question was that Rabbi Yehuda was going against the previous brisa, and then this question is that we should have brought the previous brisa to... What this question wants were to happen, that we would have brought that brisa as a question on Rabbi Yehuda, he wouldn't have had the previous question.
Excellent. That is true, right? These questions will resolve. These questions will be answered the same way. Right, absolutely right. Good. Okay, Emily, one more.
The Oud Mai Zahazar Matarisa Baye Loa Fratora Elash Mashim Shabamador Halion Havale Lamimar Ella.
So, right, that's what we're already familiar with, right? Since Alay's statement halachically contradicts his previous statements, right? Either it's only Zalapanim or it's only Adam, right? That's built on the... That's built on the same assumption. All right, Jared, you want to take over?
Could you just repeat what you just said about this last one?
So again, on the assumption that Abaye's statement, Abaye's next statement, which is lo asra Torah, right? What's the next statement is lo asra Torah shamashim madur elyon, rejects his previous statement of bimut dalut panim. Right? It's not just the dalut panim. It's all shamashim shemam madur elyon. Right? So then Abaye should say Ella.
He should
say Ella, right? But he doesn't. The Gemara just says Amar Abaye, right? So he's bothered, all right. So
but even if he said Ella, then wouldn't we say that he was just contradicting himself?
And we'll be fine with that. He's not contradicting himself. He's changing his mind.
Oh, okay.
Right, but again, the Al-Sheikh is consistent. He's reading this as a live conversation between an omniscient editor and a finite Abaye. So Abaye can change his mind as he gets new information. But he should save, so when he's doing it. And the Maksha, right, but the Maksha has to, right, you have to explain what the order, right? What the order of the conversation is? Why does he only introduce information, right? At this rate, why is he playing Abaye, as opposed to just saying, look, Abaye, here's the sugya. He's talking with Abaye, exactly right. Right, so you'll get right. What is he? What kind of dialogue is this according to the Al-Sheikh? The Socratic dialogue. In which the questioner knows where they're going. But the person being questioned doesn't. Right, but he's not comfortable. Right, as of now, right. He wants to at least if you're gonna say it's a Socratic dialogue, then you better explain what's accomplished by doing it this way. It can't just be to torture him.
So does that assume that let's say it's saying that he's changing his mind as he goes along, so that means that it is like a live conversation?
That's fine. It's a live conversation.
But it's not that, because then it would say Ella.
Okay, right? So, so he has assumptions about what it should be, and they'll have to see in his answer how many of those assumptions last. And we get to see what choices, right? What Al-Sheikh is doing is saying, if you make this assumption, then this happens. And then we can accept his answer or not, but what he points up is the consequences of viewing this, right? So I want to get, this is the answer to Samir's question of 2 days ago, it says, right? It makes a difference which way you look at it. Right? The shot changes.
But, okay, so then if we're saying that it's not a live conversation and he really, like, this is his interpretation of the brayshot separately, then is that's a good enough answer that, like, he was just interpreting the brayshot and it's really a question on the brayshot contradicting each other and not on a brayshot.
So we have to see, right, how many of these questions survive, or the Ella question goes away, certainly, right? We'll have to see, right, maybe other questions show up. You know, right, but which questions you have, right, mm-hmm. will change very much depending on how you... Depending on what your presumptions are about the literary nature of the sugya, right? That's what I want to get at, the underlying claim. Right? There's no such thing as not taking a stance about the nature of the conversation. And I go, here you have a perfectly innocent Kabbalistic acharon, right, who asks questions that totally depend on taking a stance about the nature of the Gemara. Okay, Jared, you're on.
The Ode to Dehai Breita?
Yeah.
The Ode to Dehai Breita, the Ofanim Chulei. Ika lefrushe hachi de davka shamadora elyon aval breite de la el de kamar marom stam. So this breite, you can say that it has to do with, it's just specifically dealing with the upper realms, but the
right.
Earlier breite about marom is...
We're not there yet, we're finished.
I know, breite de tavnit, okay. Echal v'chulei, medora tachnon. Ah, that's the lower realm. Umikdash, shamata, now.
So, right, so now what's his ultimate question?
Contradicting Breitas, I guess?
What's contradicting Breitas?
This one is implying only upper...
Yeah?
Upper realms are problematic, but the earlier he already had...
Does this Breitas imply that? Abaye's explanation of that breita, right, is lo asra torah. So again, on the assumption that Abaye is making a halachic, Abaye's statement is an absolute halachic statement, lo asra torah el shmashim mador elyon, then we say, look, that explains this breita, but what about all the other breita, which clearly aren't a mador elyon, right? So the Al-Sheikh just piling on, he's saying, right, and you'll see the underlying theme of the Al-Sheikh is going to be, even though this looks like a standard sugya in which somebody is responding to a contradiction between a Mishnah, right, between a Mishnah and a Braita and resolving it, and it looks like a live conversation. It can't be, because there's no Ella, and right, and every statement he makes is in contradiction to some of the previous Braita.
The Marom Stam Braita, Abaye says that refers to Mador HaElyon, doesn't he?
Okay.
This question, maybe I'm reading it wrong, seems like...
No, Abaye says it refers to Madal Panim.
Isn't that Mador HaElyon?
We'll have to figure that out. We don't know.
Okay.
Right. We don't know what Mador HaTachta Mador HaElyon means yet. Okay. All right, but again, what really the Al-Sheikh is just piling on questions that rest on, right, that really all revolve around those key assumptions, right, which are the way in which... And the reason he has those assumptions is because that's what we normally think Talmud is. Right? And the only hint we have that this is not true structurally is the absence of the word Ella. Right? So he's bothered by... So he says the absence of the word Ella is going to be his matir for allowing us to read this sugya as if it's constructed, mm-hmm. right? As if it's constructed as opposed to life. Okay.
If one is choosing between having all these issues, meaning all these issues he's having are because there's no Ella.
No. Not right. He has two issues which will resolve each other. One is that all these tirutzim seem to exist independently of, right, as if they only respond to the immediate question as opposed to responding to everything that happened in the sugya previously.
Okay.
Right, that's his substantive problem. And then he has a literary problem, they don't say Ella. They solve each other. Because you say, oh, because it doesn't say Ella, that means it's not relating to the previous sugya, it's only relating to this local thing, and that's why it doesn't say Ella. Right?
Uh-huh.
Right, so he has two kinds of questions, and those two kinds of questions will answer each other. Okay, well, if he wants, we'll have to see if that's what the answer he takes. But that's, if we look at it, we can say, oh, look, there's an easy way out. Your two questions, right? Your formal question, your substantive question, respond to each other. Okay, so go on.
The Od, Kshemakshin Beg Gemara, Midor Atachton, Mishari, Amailo Maite Mibraite to the Kaman, Kigon Chamal Venavachule, to have a Bekra, Dekam Minan, Ale, Lo Tasun, Chule, Lo Measher Bashmaim. So then the Gemara asks about, you know, is it true that everything in the Tachton is permitted? Why didn't it challenge it with the Braita that actually quotes the moon, I guess?
Well, they both quote the moon, right? What is it? What Braita does it quote?
Asher
b'shamayim l'rabot, right? L'rabot chachma l'rabot. Instead of quoting Rabbi Marom, the Rabbi Chachma Levana, right? So here again, right? So what? Right? Here again, it looks like the Maksha is just using an excuse to bring in Brisa.
Uh-huh.
Right? Why is he doing this? Why didn't he just? He knows what the evidence is. It's much better to quote it from the same pasuk than a different pasuk. Because a different pasuk, he knows perfectly well. We all know perfectly well. We can make a distinction between Motzi and Osa and Nevad and right and Nevad and Eino Nevad. Right, so quoting a bright from a different context, right? He knows the Kitanya he lo dam is an obvious way to distinguish that pasuk and not this one. Right, so what's the maksha doing? Now again, if you want to take an academic perspective, we'll say what the maksha is doing is quoting all the brights that he knows, and this is just a literary frame, right? So that you can end up seeing all the brights and all the amorite. Now, the Alshech is not willing to say that, at least not at this stage. Right, so therefore he has to ask, why are you quoting this bright? Now, again, just a minute, this is again the answer to the question Miriam asked last week, right? So from an academic perspective, you could claim the reason we introduced this Braita is so that we can is to give us an excuse to tell you there's a difference between Lo Avdam and Lo Avdam Shlo Lo Avdam, right? We bring in we ask the question so that we can give the teretz.
Right.
But the Alshich assumes that we only ask questions because we believe that the questions cannot be answered. And therefore, his question: well, why don't we go straight to the stronger question?
Okay. So it's a two-part assumption. It's first that we're asking the question because of the legitimate question, and secondly, that we would ask the better question first.
Which I think that's connected to it, right? Because if we're only interested in the stronger, there's no point in asking a weaker question. We can get rid of it because our point is to test whether this is true or not. So to test whether this is true or not,
unless you want to say that this is how it happened, and
yes.
The guy who came up with the first question.
You could also, right, but
I
right.
mean, you could also say, how come they asked this and they didn't ask some other weak questions that aren't recorded because they're other weak questions? I mean,
yeah, but that doesn't bother him. We don't ask weak questions; they're not weak questions, right? But his assumption is we're engaged in a real contest to see whether this is true or not, and the way you test that is you ask the strongest question you have. Right, so asking a weaker question, right, makes no sense in the context of right. Again, if you work the other way around, that it's just the way that the question is there, so because we need to hear the teretz, then there's no problem at all.
Mm-hmm. And is the approach that you're proposing in between, sort of?
Right now, I'm just all I'm trying to do is point out that you have to make assumptions one way or the other. Right, and I'm open to any of these possibilities, right? What I want to just get is the methodological point that you cannot read a sugya without taking a stance about this. Then you have to make your own decision whether the stance you take is going to be local to this sugya, or whether you have to take a methodological stance about how to read Talmud in general, right? That's a larger issue. Right? But I'm doing it through it, right? Because you can see, look, at every moment, the Alshich is making assumptions. They're not necessarily the assumptions you would have made, which you thought were the firmest assumptions.
Why can't you just say that it was random?
That what was Rambam?
The son of the Gemara.
You could. He doesn't. He's not willing to say. He's not willing to say
no,
that.
No, but I mean, wouldn't that be reading the Gemara without making either assumption?
That this is just a live conversation, and they just wrote down whatever anybody asks.
Or, I don't know. That whoever wrote down this dialogue didn't have a specific agenda in mind, either to ask the best question or to show different halachos, but just
wrote down as it happened.
And not even as it happened, just
put together random thoughts on a sugya without a structure.
I don't know.
You could try it, you know. You can do that, you know. I think that will have its own costs. I don't think the Al-Sheikh is willing to pay those costs. Okay, one more turn.
Wait, the Nami Hani Mili La Tuimi Brightsa El is saying it.
The Nami Havi Matsi La Tuimi, right? Oh. Could also have asked the question.
Okay. It could have, meaning there are better questions to
ask.
Okay.
Right, there's a clear question, which is it mentions Chama Levana specifically, or you could just say Shem Hashem Amarom, and force them to say that's not the Chama Levana.
Right. The Ode My Date De Abai De Meikara Amar Lo Asa Torah El Bash De Shem Hashem De Lamata El Lo Madar Elyon De Tachton The Hashtag Amar De Davka Be Elyon. So what was the Abai thinking?
Yeah.
When he said that really the issue is just why did he only did the Torah only answer Shulamata? He didn't touch.
Abai initially said Shemashim Shulamata.
Right.
At the end, right, he said right. So we understand there are three places, right? There were four places, right? There's Mata, Mador Elyon and Mador Tachton. Those are three different places, right?
Right.
So originally Abai said only Shemashim Shalmata. In the end he says only, right, he says only Shemador Elyon and maybe Mador Tachton. Now we have a substantive question, which
now
is...
Now it sounds like he thinks just Elyon. He's ignoring...
Right. Now he assumes Abai must have... Right, now, he's moved Abai from being a purely literary thing. From, you know, one possibility is Abai will say whatever he needs to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Abai is purely interested in the mechanics, and then this question wouldn't make sense. But the other possibility is that Abai, whatever Abai says, he has to have a rationale for. So Abai must have had an understanding of the prohibition. And what kind of conceptual understanding of the prohibition could generate somebody to say, "One, oh, it's only those that are forbidden. No, it's only those that are forbidden."
Well, right. Jumping over everything in between.
Yes,
right.
And right, totally reversing his position, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So again. That assumes that Abaye cares about the substance and
right.
Isn't just interested in answering the suggestion. Right? This is the same kind of question as Mike, right? As Mike Kamashani Lo Asra Tolabit Mr. Alapanim. It assumes that it's not enough to answer the problem. You have to make sense.
But it contradicts his question about Ella, doesn't it? Because his question with Ella implied the presumption that, therefore, if had it been there, you would have thought there would have been a Hava Amina that, Abaye, what did care about Rabban Gamliel, and then we said that since it lacks, it could just be that the editor is putting together various arguments Abaye is making. But now it seems like we're saying, Abaye does have a personal interest. That's why there's this whole Mishmashim Dilamata.
Well, I think he can have it both ways. He could say Abaye is trying to resolve Gamliel, but he's not going to try to resolve Gamliel without making sense. Right? There has to be some reason. Something has to make sense to Abaye. Right? I think that underlying he's not satisfied reading Abaye as having no prior commitments at all.
Okay.
Right. Abaye knows his Kabbalah, and Abaye knows, right, and Abaye has some kind of vision of what Lo Ta'asu Niti should be.
Okay.
Right. He may end up saying, you know what, Abaye thought this, and then he changed that, but he has to have a Chakira at least.
Okay.
Right. Okay. You can't just say, he probably doesn't like to answer that. I think sometimes, it's a radical thesis, I think there's some places where we pick random things to usher on the assumption that some things have to be usher, but it doesn't matter which.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I understand Hilchos Ribis de Rabbanan. Right, if you go through,
wow.
If you go through all the cases of what's usher for Ribis de Rabbanan, interest, right?
Oh, okay.
So Deoraita, we can distinguish, right? We can distinguish it. But de Rabbanan, the Gemara has a whole perek, right, which just talks about, right, Ezo Neshech, which talks about which cases we look at and we say, that's enough like ribbit that it's forbidden, in which case we say, no, that's perfectly fine, that's just commerce. If you try and come up with a pattern, I think it's hopeless. But if you say, you know what, the problem is that the boundary between ribbit and commerce is almost impossible, so what you have to do is you have to ban enough things that people remember that there's a prohibition, but not so many things you can't engage in commerce, and which things you ban doesn't make a difference at all. You just have to, you can put 20 cases right up on a board and throw darts and pick three.
Raise awareness.
I think that's the
that's
most
the
plausible.
Not having tried to figure out Indonesia.
Yeah, that's the way. It's the way it's rendering. That's the rendering.
I can see that being an unpopular position.
Well,
how about the Rambam says, from the back or from the front?
Well, everyone understands there are certain things. Right, the Rambam says about certain halachos d'oraisa, right? That God, you know, they have to standardize, right? So that God doesn't care shkita front or the back. You just have to have everyone has to do shkita the same way. Mm-hmm. Right, that's a similar type of idea. Now, it doesn't help you in Eidon Eshla because if you want a paskin, you still have to come up with some kind of pattern for
nothing helps you.
For paskin. But after struggling through it for a year, that was my, in the end I gave up any attempt at conceptual formulations. Very, very narrow, specific formulations like this looks like that, this looks like that. That's fine. If you end up saying that, you know, commerce is permitted in pork bellies but forbidden but forbidden in hog bellies, even though you can't tell the difference between pork and hog. I don't know the difference between them. It's fine with me.
Wait, there's a difference?
I don't know. Might just be a name. Might be usher if you call it pork bellies and whether if you call it hog bellies. It really doesn't matter to me. So I think there are things where that is true.
So why doesn't everyone just call it the thing that makes it mitzvah?
If you know, eventually they'll learn the trick, yeah. There are lots of things where we do that. Okay, any case, that's his hand. You don't have to buy into that, as you know, Jonathan points out correctly. It is a way of abandoning the effort of understanding anything.
which saves a lot of time.
Which does save a lot of time, right? More time for Hurrius. okay.
Which, on the other hand, is not helpless to understand.
Okay, so then we have, okay, so right now we get, V'od, Maika Mashani Kitania Haili of Dom, Levrais of L'El Damashash Bamorom, Levrais of the Tavnis Hecho, Hainlo Nestor Eli of Dom, Halo to Asunktiv. Okay, so now he's building up the, right, once he's pointed out that the Asher Bashamayim Ma'al ends up banning the same things as the other brights of the Lo Ta'asuniti. Right? So he points out that this teret, Lo Avdam, is useless in the context of the sugya. Right? It explains that brighta, but you can't really believe that that teret is going to resolve the problem of the sugya. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you're not going to be able to make the claim that
right.
The pasuk of Lo Ta'asuniti
mm-hmm.
is only talking about Lo Avdam. So it just points out again that part, right, that has to be that doesn't belong in the sugya. That brighta doesn't belong in the sugya. That teret doesn't belong in the sugya. Right? They're just there to make a separate point that there are some things in Asur only Avdam. And since he sees them as on the direct line of the sugya, right? And he assumes that there's a unified authorship to the sugya, which has a single conversational line. So he has to explain why it's here. Right? I can resolve it by just bracketing it. Right? What was it?
Or
right?
Putting it in another face type.
Yeah, exactly right. Right, sorry, identity. Right, right, right. So that's it. You have to decide if you're comfortable with that notion that there are places where if we were doing a rishon, we would say something like v'hayasalgadata,
mm-hmm.
right, something like right. that. Right. Don't worry about that. Right. It's a footnote.
Mm-hmm.
This is a footnote. Don't worry. Right. That bright that we can get rid of. Okay. But he thinks it's part of the live conversation as of this stage. Right. So he can't give an answer.
But, I mean, the Kitanya Hahi doesn't...
Kitanya Hahi answers that right of Asher Vashemayim Mal,
yeah.
But it's useless in the context of the sugya, because we know that's not going to work for Lo Ta'asuni Ti, and the Maksha knows that we're going to quote a bright that which proves the same. Right.
Okay.
Right, so what's the Maksha doing, right, and the Kitanya Hahi of Dam is not a Baye anymore, right? So,
who is that in the Al-Shukh understanding?
That's a good question, I don't know. I don't know who the Kitanya Hahi of Dam is. It may be the Maksha giving it, right, you know, giving you a separate stage. It may be that the Maksha and the anonymous Matarites are all supposed to know all the information in the sugya. I don't know what his editorial perspective on that is. It's a good question.
So the problem essentially is that this is just a dead end.
Yeah.
Right.
The Brighta adds nothing.
Right.
All the Brighta only leads to this Teret, right? The Brayta is not the best question, and the Teretz is irrelevant to the best question, so who cares?
So if you view the Teretz as being an extension of Abaye, then we don't have this question.
Yeah, we can say, look, Abaye didn't know this question was coming, right?
Like whoever says, well, Ovdan, yeah.
Right, Abaye just doesn't write, but it doesn't, but it, well, we should think it should be Amar Abaye, right? Doesn't Amar Abaye say that, right? That is its own issue. Okay. The Ode, the Ka'amar in hachinami mesefi dekra nafka, Vimkain Hadra Kushiluchte, Kavan the Mikra the Bitachas Marbe Shoshal Katan, Lishdok Mechama the Holshikenu. How do you understand that question? Well, Jonathan, what do you think?
Even if you assume, or one is assumes that we split it, right? We have two separate drushes working.
Yeah.
Right. So then, from the puzzle of mitachas, right? We're learning, right? Even the shilshul katan.
Uh-huh.
The puzzle is already, but the puzzle, the puzzle and the drushes are already referring to even the most minuscule things, right? That we don't need to tell me that the chama is asur because, right? Once you say that the context is talking even about the most minimal things, right? We should learn everything else out from extrapolation.
Good, but I don't think you need to split the breita, even within that breita.
Right, we don't really need a shir b'shamayim.
Right, this is the question within that breita. Within that breita, right, once we say shil shel katan.
Right, we know that therefore everything else is
good. Now you guys know the answer to this question, but Yashuv doesn't. Why? What's the answer to that question? Yeah?
That you are able to make a sculpture of the shil shel katan on that chama.
What's the answer?
The answer I would say is you can't make kal v'chomer in this case, and
why?
You have to have. I don't know.
They're both in the same pasuk.
Right.
Shiva Shmaya Mel. What's the answer?
What?
Are they actually different midrashim? Like,
no, but I'll give you a clue. You know the answer, and the Alshas doesn't. So you must have access to information the Alshas didn't. What information do you have access to that he didn't? What?
The Shilta? No.
No?
Are any of the previous sources stuff that El Sheikh wouldn't have had?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
What didn't he have necessarily?
Did he have the Braisa on Mitachat? Yeah,
he didn't have one of the Midrashim. Right, he didn't have this, the Braisa which has this Midrash. Right, and what's the end of this Midrash? Kol Kach.
Oh.
Kol Kach, right. Kol Kach, Kol Chatora, Kedet. Right, so the
Medrash could still be asking the question not on the Braisa but on the Gemara for bringing it here.
But how do we know he didn't have it?
We don't, except for the fact that he asked the question.
Oh.
He asked the question because he reads this as following Midrash Halakha rules, which means that you can ask a Kal v'Chomer. But the Mechilta told both Mechiltas, right? Which Mechilta quoted it?
He's asking the question on the Midrash itself. I thought he was asking on whoever's bringing the Midrash, so you only need to bring the second half of the Midrash.
No.
Really?
I think he's asking the question on the Midrash itself. Why do you, Hadra Kushri L'Dichtei, right? The Gemara says, right, you should even a Shil Shel Katan, but once you say even a Shil Shel Katan, then why do you have to ask about the Chama? Right? So we know the answer to that is that this is not a normal Midrash Halakha. Right, the Midrash Halakha itself goes out of its way to tell you, I'm not following the usual rules.
Right.
Right,
what would be a normal rule?
Normal rule would say, we say Shul Katan, Kal V'Chomer, right, if you can't even worship Shul Katan, right, and when we read the Mechilta, we said immediately, uh-oh, right, what's going on here? Right, and that's
really?
What, pardon?
I mean, the wording of the question is, the Ka'amar in Hachinami, or in Mesefi the Crazy, is asking on whoever it is that said in Hachinami, which is not the Braita.
But this isn't the right, you said
and then you brought the second half of the Midrash. Well, what are you doing the whole two-step for? You can just have brought the second half of the Midrash in the first place.
You think he's asking the question, why bring in the Shulshul? Why not ask the question, Shemadora Taftan Mishari? But the Shulshul Katan is not the Madora.
No, really, if you end up saying in Hachinami and then bringing the second half of the Midrash, we could have just started out with the first half of the Midrash.
No,
right?
Because then we wouldn't have known it was only Lov Dam. Right?
Yeah, but we don't need to know that it's only Lav Zan because it's a tangent anyway.
No,
it's right? It should be Mazar Atakto Mishari, the Hatanya, Asher Ba'aret, Lebot Yemimun Haroza, Arim Ritaka, Lebot Shoshul Katan. And if we're Asher Shoshul Katan, then Kochama Lubana Kochim Mazar Koshikane. And then the terrace would be, right? That's Lav Dam.
Yeah.
And then they just move on. No?
Maybe. I don't know.
And then you remove one. They also agree to Mishai.
I guess. I don't know. I don't think that's what... Let's read this one. He says, Gamar Inach Inami Sefer Kra Nafka. Dimkein Hadra Kushel Duchtei. Right? So what does that mean, Hadra Kushel Duchtei?
Now the question stands again.
Right. Which question?
Rabban Gamliel, I think, right?
Once we say that we learn it out from the that once we say that Shulshul Katan is also Usur, right, then the question of Gamliel isn't Lishtok Mechama, that can't be a question, Lishtok, right? Hadra Kushla Duchte, right, the question is the Ilo of Dama feel Shulshul, it means we're going back to the question Ilo of Dama feel Shulshul Katan Nami, right, which is a question in the Braita. Right, why does the Braita talk about Chama Levana? Why doesn't it talk about Shulshul Katan?
Right.
And his answer is no, because right. So your answer by saying that Shulshul Katan really is, so now we reversed our question. So once we talk about Shulshul Katan, why do we need to talk about Chama? It's all the whole language, the whole dialogue is within the Braita. Right, the question was, why does it say Chama if Shulshul Katan is Usur? And the answer is Shulshul Katan is Usur. It said so. Okay, so then why did it have to say Chama? I think that's the way he's reading it.
You don't think it could just be why didn't...
He's not really driving a meal at all, right? He's with it. Hadra Kushla Duchte means the previous Kushra, Ilo of Dama Filo Shulshul Katan Nami.
Yeah. Now all of a sudden I can't find the place in the...
I think. I think that depends on stance, right? So if I'm right, so this is his question. So his question... A, you have to realize that his question depends on not having seen the Mechilta, right, I think. And B, right, he's very plausibly saying this is not the normal rules of Midrash Halakha. And
Mechilta
that depends.
Mechilta doesn't mention Shulshul Katan, though.
Mechilta doesn't mention Shulshul Katan, is that true?
Yeah, and
I'm having trouble finding. There are two Mechilta.
It also doesn't have the same drash on Sheva Shemayim Ma, I think.
There are two Mechilta, right? So, Chilta Rabbi Ishmael, he goes through all this.
He
Asher B'Shamayim Yechol Dmut Chama Levana Kochim Mazalot. Right, exclusively, Tamad Lama Mimal, right? So it has that. And it has a Duvia. What is it, how far does it go down? Kol Semel?
It has something else, though, Mitacha, it's after it.
It has Mitacha Namayim, which we have in also. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, but I have to also... But that's the other one. Okay.
It does get down to Chagavim, Shkatim, or Rimasim, though.
So we have a Shulshul from the other Mechilta, which doesn't have the Kol Kach Hadaf in it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Interesting. Okay. Might be that. Maybe you're right, that if you can separate them. All right. I leave that. My tendency is to think that that what's going on here is that the Al-Sheikh is assuming that this follows the normal rules, and guess what? The Mechilta tells us that Avodah Zarah doesn't follow the usual rules. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, you got to ask for everything in detail. Because people will always find a pitchon pet to find a way to make this mutter.
So that's probably not true. Like, what about Avodah Zarah of a giraffe?
Avodah Zarah of a giraffe?
Yeah.
Yeah, so?
So that's not explicit in any of the Midrashim, presumably you can.
Call Behemah Shevaris, right? Tavnit, it's in all of them, right? That's what that Midrash does to, right? Tavnit called it the whole Pasuk, right? Tav Zachar Nekeva, Behemah Varemis, right? Fitzipor Kanaf, all that.
Okay, what about amphibians?
Shall we talk about Mayim, right?
We
got everything except for possibly subterraneans. We don't have any tachas l'aretz, so maybe it's much in the end to...
Like a mole?
A mole, yeah.
Or Martians.
Or Martians.
But they don't exist.
Yeah, it's the problem. Whenever you try to be comprehensive, you fail.
Oh, a moon rock! We can make a pesel of a moon rock.
Yeah. This is what I always tell my students the first day of school.
No, I mean, it can't be about being comprehensive. There has to be some other difference between Shulshul Katan and Chama.
So comprehensiveness never succeeds. That's the underlying... the story I always tell my students the first day of class, they hand out a syllabus, and everyone tells you, teacher is supposed to hand really detailed syllabi of expectations. So I tell them about Birachel Bitcha HaKtan. Mine is not.
I tell them what mine says is I expect you to behave reasonably and in accordance with, you know, with relaxation of the classroom. And I tell them, look, you know, I could put more detailed regulations in, but I don't think that's very pointful because of Berach El Bitcha Ktana, which is a phrase which I first heard from a rabbi I was interviewing, didn't understand. I looked it up, and it says, Berach El Bitcha Ktana, Rashi says, is there, right? It's what Yaakov says to Lavan. And Rashi says, when you're dealing with the Ramah, you have to be really specific. Right? And maybe he'll rename his other daughter Rachel, right? No, it's Rachel, right? If he brings his mother Rachel, Rachel Bitcha. Maybe he'll rename Raleigh, right? So Berach El Bitcha Ktana is the way you deal with Ramayim. Does it work?
Yeah.
No, Lavan brings in Leah anyway.
But he doesn't find a loophole.
But he fools him anyway.
Okay, but that's not the point. He got him to explicitly break the rules as opposed to finding a loophole.
Aha, so you think he won. Okay, well, that's a nice way out. I think his teachers do that. I think the moral of the story is that contracts are only worth things if you trust people.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't trust people, the contracts aren't worth anything. Although this is contradicted by the opening episode of The Paper Chase, which is a very important point. See, that's all it is.
I've seen the movie.
Is the premise the same in the movie as in the opening episode, or is that the premise of the movie? Paper Chase is a Harvard Law School movie in which the thesis is that the way to I'll kill the movie if you're now, but all right. There's a contract exam which everyone is terrified of, and it turns out that the contract exam involves looking up lots and lots and lots of stuff in a very little bit amount of time, and pretty rapidly everyone discovers that you can't look up that amount of stuff in that amount of time, and this is random. They all think they're going to fail, so they have to start trading answers. But we've already established throughout the movie that none of them are really trustworthy characters.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to...
Oh, that sounds really funny.
So the only way that they can, that they're willing to give the answers, is if they write contracts. So it turns out that the groups that write the best contracts and actually get people to give them their answers are the ones that win, and that's how they...
That sounds like a really funny... That sounds so... Okay.
It's fun.
It's fun.
And it has John Houseman, it made John Houseman famous with a cool, really cool British accent. Fine. Then we say, the Kahadar Parech Vasiya Gradasa Mishare Vatani Vukule, Maishna Bryce Leo Lokatani Chama, Mehach Lokatani Ophanim. So, how do you understand that question?
But if we're trying to establish an opinion, I think for Abaye or even for whoever we're talking about, we had the original brisa of Kigon Ofanim, which didn't include Chama. So now if we want to go by this brisa of Kigon Chama, then we don't include Ofanim. So they're mutually exclusive.
I don't think so, although I think that's a nice try.
Okay.
I think. I think it's just that he's having the same problem. We introduce a new braita to ask this question of Asiya Gredas, right, to contradict Asher B'Shamayim Imal, right? Your Teretz Ketani Ha'ilu of Dam isn't going to work, right? And the claim of the Yisr is only about that, and we say, because look, there's a braita which tells us that you can't make the Chama Levanah Kofim Azalot, and that's right, and that this braita contradicts you, even though implicitly all the other braitot, right, your teretz worked for all the other bright, though, but it doesn't work for this one. That's the assumption.
Right.
But it doesn't work for the other bright either, because the pasuk, Asher B'Shamayim Imal, bans malachim. We already had a bright, though, which banned malachim for lotasun. So you don't need a new bright to ask this question. Right? You knew that Kitanya Ha'ilo of Dam wasn't a teretz based on the previous bright, though.
But a Kitanya Ha'i.
Right, so we're saying, we thought Kitanya Ha'ilo of Dam was sufficient. Right, was sufficient to say, oh, those things are only forbidden.
Or from that puzzle, but I guess we're not assuming.
Right, but in the end we say, no, you know what, right? Mm-hmm. You can't claim that these Isurim only apply. That doesn't make sense. So he's having the same problem. It's over and again, the same problem is that he assumes that this Katiani Lalav of Dam is not a tangent, but is in relation to the previous statements. Right, and the final question he has is, Od, Kidimashani Achirimasu Haile Lomar,
Ode Kidim Ashani
Achim.
Right, Ha'ilu Le'Meimer Ella. Right, okay, same. Same issue. Okay, good. That's the end of the Al-Sheikh series of questions. Okay, which you'll see revolve around a set of editorial assumptions, and then you have to figure out which of the editorial assumptions you accept, which you reject, and you can come up with your own reading of the sugya that acknowledges them. Somebody want to give a brief summary of what you understand as the Al-Sheikh's overall answer to all these questions?
Can I use my diagram?
By all means, that's a diagram.
Okay.
I'm not a visual learner, though, I warn you.
Diagrams of Mara are always welcome for me.
Okay. So, I mean, the way we sort of understood the Al-Sheikh is, at least the body of it, the way he understands the Gemara, as the questioner and Abaye are together limiting what's mutter until nothing is mutter. So first the questioner brings lo tesun oti, which basically saying everything should be aser, and then Abaye is saying no, that only applies to aretz. And then the questioner brings to say, okay, aretz is aser, but everything else, all the not aretz should all be also be aser. And then Abaye says, no, that only applies to things that are shalem. So then we have everything which is aretz and everything in shamayim which is shalem is aser, and everything in shamayim which is not shalem is mutter. Then we have the Adam thing, which is sort of like a tangent, and it has its own explanation. So we think Adam is an example of something in Shamayim which is not Shalem, so we think, and we know that Adam is Usher, so we think that everything in Shamayim which is not Shalem should be Usher, but no, that's an exception, so that's Usher, but everything else in Shamayim which is not Shalem should be Mutter. Then we have the Sofim Chayas HaKodesh, and those things, because we don't know what they look like, there's something in Shamayim which is not Shalem, so all that stuff should be Usher. And Abaye says, no, that only refers to Mador HaElyon and not Mador HaTachton.
I got to ask a much broader question.
Okay.
Why doesn't it say Ella before Abaye's Tirutim?
Because everything that Abaye said was Usher until now, Abaye still thinks is Usher.
Okay.
And every time Abaye limits a specific question, he's acknowledging that something an additional thing is usher, and he's maintaining that everything he said was usher until now is also usher.
Okay, so it's not Ella because Abaye continues to hold his halachic positions. So what kind of dialogue is going on?
A contracting.
What is Abaye? Is Abaye trying to resolve Rav Gamliel? Is that what the conversation is about, or is the conversation about what's really usher?
Both. The assumption is that Rav Gamliel is doing something mutter, and all these braytos define things which are usher. So you have to you have to be able to place Rav Gamliel as mutter within the braytos which say what's usher.
So let's ask the $24,000 question. Suppose they started the sugi this way. Not hasam the mustras levanot toiler rong amliya lemishari v'haktiv lo tasuniti lo tasun gidmut shamshem shamshin lefanai am rabaye shani rabbi gamliel de'acherim asulo.
Then we wouldn't have had the definition.
So what would have been wrong? Why don't we just do that?
Because then we still wouldn't know that all these other things are
there. That's true.
Right, and then we might bring all of those and say, well, aren't those proofs that we could have gotten?
No, those don't say anything about a cherim. They're all lo ta'asun. So, why does the whole conversation in between?
Mm-hmm.
Not right. According to the Al-Sheikh, why does the conversation between Tana Tam and a cherim exist? What does it teach us?
Define the usher. That everything is usher.
So we're interested because it teaches us halacha, and it's a way of introducing halacha to us, even though it's not actually necessary for the conversation.
Well, that and the fact that we're also assuming that Abaye didn't know about all the additional questions.
So the Maksha asks the questions to Abaye in a way which would help you learn the sugya, even though the Maksha already knew from the beginning that the real answer was Shani Rav Gamliel de'acherim asulo.
Well, we don't know that the Maksha knew about that answer.
So who gave the answer, if not the Moksha?
Why is there ever a set of kashu that ultimately lead to a separate answer when you could have just skipped to the original answer?
Because it could be lies. Right, it could be. Well, right. Let's think of this sugya in the following way. Right. Suppose we indented everything between Umishari and Shani Rav Gamliel. Does anything change according to the Al-Shrich in the conversation? Right. If that's the editor, right, then Abaye serves no role at all.
Mm-hmm.
Abaye has absolutely no usefulness in explanation of Rav Gamliel. Because
mm-hmm.
Rav Gamliel was made by others, or it was made in pieces. Right? Or he did it lislamed. And none of those answers depend in any way. Right? So you might as well treat the conversation, right, whether the Al-Shrich wants to say this or not. If you read the sugya that way, you might as well treat Abaye as if he's irrelevant to Rav Gamliel, because in the end, Abaye has nothing to say about Rav Gamliel. Right? That's the point. Right? In the end, it turns out there are two completely axes. Now, the other approaches which people have to take in the sugya is to say no. Some things are only mutter, which I'm not sure you're right that the Al-Shrich doesn't take this. I'm just interested in that. Right? In order to resolve this problem, you have to end up saying that even in the maskana of the sugya, not everything is mutter of acherim asulo. Right? Acherim asulo only works in conjunction with one of the other brayta. Okay, so this is a choice you have to make about the nature. Right? Are you willing to emerge in with the sugya, going on as if Abaye never happened? Which feels like cheating because Abaye is an Amora. Right? So say an Amora spent a lot of time in the sugya, but really, there's this anonymous person, we'll call him the Stam, who knew more than Abaye at the start,
mm-hmm.
knew enough that Abaye would be irrelevant no matter what,
mm-hmm.
and just used Abaye as a punching bag to get that in. And to get in all these interesting halachic statements.
Okay, many of which are by Abaye.
Right, that was the Moksha.
Really using him to.
Right, could it be that Abaye
was. Give him a platform.
Or giving him a platform, right?
Okay.
But couldn't it be Abaye himself sort of building that platform?
But he intentionally is
bringing all of these to in order to finally make his final point that now we know what's Esser and what's Mutar and it's Shachar
and Mutula. We know. At the end, right, we could have skipped all that. It wouldn't change anything because none of that affects anything. We could have said Acher Masul at the beginning and nothing would have changed. Right, everything Abaye says, right, up until that line, and Abaye doesn't say that line.
Mm-hmm.
Right, all that can be skipped.
But if that were all relevant to Acher Masulo, we would have had the answer of Acher Masulo at the beginning, and then we might have said all that only.
Yeah, we could have written it that way too.
But then we might have had the questions afterwards.
We might have. We could have written it that way. Say, if you think of this as a literary choice, and you say, look, there's an editor with a conversation with Rav Gamliel that wants to write a sugya about what's Usher to make. So they integrate a previous conversation with Abaye, right, as a tangent in the conversation on Leil, the same way they integrated the bright of Kiditanya into that. Right, then this makes a lot of sense, if you want to take that position.
Can you put that the ultimate purpose of
that? Yeah, you have a kind of, yeah.
So I buy it, except for this, like, annoying little clause at the very, very end of the tshuva.
Yeah.
Right, where he says, right,
yes, I don't think the Al-Shrich takes this in the end. I think the Al-Shrich is not willing to pay this price. I'm not going through the details of the Al-Shrich's approach to me. Right? I think if you go through the Al-Shrich, he's not willing to do that because he understands that that's the price he would have to pay,
mm-hmm.
and so he has to find some way
to make this necessary.
Right, to make this necessary. Right. Abaye has to have been useful. So Abaye isn't useful.
And we have a big problem.
Right, then the sugya, the whole structure of the sugya.
Abaye has to have been useful for the Rabban Gamliel story specifically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Abaye has to have been part of, right, useful to this conversation. I think that's the Al-Shrich's outcome.
Does the Al-Shrich think that the Mekasha is the same person as the Acher Masulo? I mean, because we can read the whole dialogue between the Mekasha and
Mekasha
Matarets, just about defining the Isser, and then once we define the Isser as everything, that's sort of like the end of that sugya, and then however new editor or a few hundred years later comes along and has to and comes up with this other answer.
Yeah, you can do right. So you can put in all the assumptions you want. You can have a variegated sum, right? Right.
No,
you can
but
do that
I think
also.
That makes it easier in terms of it's not that this was all set up because we knew we were getting to the answer of Achir Masulo.
Yeah, you can do it that way also. It just requires you to assume
well,
that the Psalm is written at different times by
well,
different people
right.
who are unaware of each other. That's messy. Right? You'll find Rishonim who make that assumption. That's messy. Right? But what I just want to point out, let's suppose, cut out, let's do it the other way around. Let's cut out Rabban Gamliel, let's cut out everything after Shana Yachir and Masulo.
Okay.
And let's start, let's look at the sugya that says like this. My dichtiv, lo ta'asuniti. Amar Abaye.
Then it's just Abaye's halakha.
Then it makes perfect sense.
Right.
Right. There's no right. There's nothing that Abaye says only makes sense as a response to Rabban Gamliel.
Is it possible that all of that existed and then the Stam took the Rabban
yes,
Gamliel?
That's what I'm pointing out. Right. It's entirely.
I see. And frames this around.
Exactly
it.
Right. Exactly right.
So
right.
This came.
So it's equally plausible. It'd be equally plausible to say that Abaye used this, right?
Abaye is a maksha too. It's all written by him. Sure.
Right. Yeah.
It's all, right. It's all right.
The meaning that, like, you know, the conversation between the conversation between Abaye and the right, and the anonymous omniscient redactor occurred right
in Abaye's head.
Occurred to Abaye when you heard about this strange story about Rabban Gamliel.
Right,
and how that possibly could have.
This is the same thing that I tried to argue last week. I don't need to take a historical position. Right. I'm surely pointing out something literary. Right. This is a way. Right. You can then resolve the literary issue into history however you want. But. Right, but you can't avoid the literary issue. And then how you want to do it, right? So now, right, you have to recognize that whatever reading you have of the sugya has to take a stance. Right? Do you feel does your reading of the sugya have to relate Abaye to Rabban Gamliel specifically as opposed to just the Baitot? Do you have to read the statements of Abaye as additive or can you read them as alternative? Does the statement can Acher Mos Asulo work as a teretz by itself, or do you have to combine Acher Mos Asulo with at least one other thing, right? Does Asher B'Shemayim Mimal can Asher B'Shemayim Mimal be on an entirely different axis, or there has to be some way in which Asher B'Shemayim Mimal relates to the topic of Rabban Gamliel? All those are choices you have to make about the sugya. Those are choices that every Rishon will make about the sugya in different ways. It may be that...
Is Yalshich a Rishon?
Yalshich is contemporary of the Beit Yosef, right? So he's 16th century, so you want to call
very,
what you
very
want.
Early Akra.
Very early Akra.
Okay.
The only reason I give the Akra again is not because I think that his answer, whatever it is really compelling, or that
clever.
I think... Pardon?
That's clever.
Yeah, or that his questions are... Or that his questions are dispositive is because what he did was he went through the sugya in order and showed you the choices you have to make,
mm-hmm.
and I think when you see that, and you can see how his questions are all built on the same set of assumptions, and then you can look at somebody else and say, oh, what basically everybody else is going to. Now there's the Al-Sheikh also, if when he goes through his answer, right, and we sort of also point out that how you understand the sugya substantively depends on prior philosophic positions as well. It depends on what you think angels are,
mm-hmm.
and what you think appearances are.
Right.
And what you think the relationship between the human being and God is, and what you think the relationship between human beings and angels are. All right? Nobody...
Wait, can you explain this last
question? Yeah. You have to, right, this sugya puts Partuf Adam, right, on its own. Right? And it has Malachim, and how you understand, right, and it has Bo Tassun Oti, it has Bo Tassun Kibbut Shamashai, right, it has a whole set of other, of Dalet Hayot specifically. How you understand those statements will all depend on do you think all angels look only like these chayot? Are we limited to Yecheskel? Are we allowed to have other visions? Do we think any angels look like human beings? Do we think that God is any kind of figure? Right? All of those questions exist prior to the Gemara. I am not aware of anybody who tried to answer those questions based on the Gemara, at least among the Rishonim.
And I have any Rishon who says, well, you know what, I used to think that angels didn't look like human beings. But look, here's the Gemara who says it. Right, nobody says that. Everybody interprets
it. Some of those questions are gotten rid of by the original Midrash. I mean, the fact that E.T. means O.T. means Partzuf Adam means that something or other has Partzuf Adam. The fact that we have the Dal Panim, I mean, it doesn't answer all those questions, but...
No, those, you have to account for them, but how you understand them isn't right. This is not the sugya, so far as I know, that any Rishon used to try and figure out their metaphysics. Right? Nobody used this sugya to try and figure out what can we say about images of God? What do angels look like? Right? Everyone assumes that they already know the answers to those questions, and they can read this sugya accordingly. Right? And that's a valuable thing to understand that changes your philosophic presuppositions change what plausible readings of the Gemara are. Because if you assume that angels look like human beings, then certain readings become plausible or necessary. And if you assume that angels don't look like human beings, now you might just say, why don't you let the reading of this sugya drive you? But nobody does. Right? Nobody lets this sugya drive your metaphysics. Okay, now you have to decide then for yourself, what do you do if you have your own metaphysics? And you find a Rishon who has a metaphysics that doesn't agree with yours. So you reject them halacha automatically. Because they're reading this sugya based on their metaphysics. Let's suppose that you discover there's a corporealist. Right, who thinks that really the reason for that Lo Tasuni Ti means O.T. is because God looks like a very, very big human being. Right? You've read Shira Kama, you took it literally.
Read what?
Shira Kama is a Kabbalistic work
which... It's a mystical work. It's pre-Kabbalistic.
Yeah. Fine, okay. Right. It's a mystical work. But mystics include everything, so whatever. It's a pre-Kabbalistic work, fine. It's a proto-Kabbalistic work that describes
fine.
The size of God. So now, it may be that we will find Rishonim who read the sugya on that premise.
Mm-hmm.
So do we reject them out of hand? Because
what would the halacha that we would be rejecting be?
We'll have to see how, but once you assume that that's really what it means, right, then you read the sugya this way, then you read the sugya, right, what Adam means this, right, so all sorts of complicated readings, sugya depend on that, certainly angels depend on that. What happens if you look at it and say, you know what, they read the sugya because of that, but we have a limit good. We can say it doesn't really mean that, right,
mm-hmm.
If you read it as a metaphor, right, you can say something like, because God describes the human being as B'Tselem Elohim, and right now he took that literally, that's why he read it this way. But we can read it as a metaphor, and we can make the same drusha. So let's rescue his reading of the Gemara. Even though we know that if he had thought the way we did, he probably wouldn't have read the Gemara that way. Because this two-stage metaphor is a rationalization, not a rationale. You understand the difference in rationalization and rationale?
Mm-hmm.
That's trying to make sense? Rationalization is what you explain something you already have, but a rationale is why you do it. Right, is why you do it. So, right. So that's an underlying question you always have to address. Is it's nice to think that theology and halacha are utterly independent, but they're not.
Is there an example of that in Alshich?
The Alshich is going to assumes, for example, the Alshich assumes that we, I think, if he is right, and I think he is, that we know what other angels look like. So you can't read the Dalet Chayot.
And so what would be the nafkamina if someone said that we don't know what other angels look like?
Then you can read the Dalet Chayot as specific, and that eliminates the stira between that and right. Right? It opens up all sorts of possibilities, I think, that weren't there otherwise. The Alshich rejects them, because it can't be. That there can't ever have been a position that only the Dalet Chayot are forbidden among angels. I don't have strong positions one way or the other. About that, I do tend to favor incorporealism. By the other hand, I also tend to believe that the rational is that it's hard to tell between rationalities and rationalizations, and that we always end up using metaphors. And I know it doesn't bother me if metaphors slip into the line into literalism. Like I don't believe that the Yair Lorbagon. I don't believe that because the Medrash says that the reason Kilat Elohim Taloi. Right, it's because people look at the king and his identical brother. I don't believe that the person who wrote that medrash has to believe that God had a body. Yair-Lorbanel, or given his book, that the person who wrote that, obviously that marriage only works, right, if you really think that God has a body. And I don't think that makes any sense. Right? Who says? Right? Even if the people believe that God has a body, think God has a really large body, nobody's going to mistake a little human being for, right, as a twin for this really large body. So I assume that it's a metaphor mitchila. You can decide for yourselves what the metaphor mitchila is. The big points in the Al-Sheikh are, right, so I want to end with this, and then we'll have to do Tosfot, and we can end it tomorrow, and maybe I'll even start, we'll start doing, going back, the thesis I have for the, we only have 16 regular shurim the whole summer. Like I told them, well, this is number 4. And we need to do 4 to 5 to give. So we're already behind, as I told you, we're going to do from the day. But I'm hoping that by the end of this week, we'll be done with this figure. So we have to start going through all the Rishonim tomorrow, which I will try and do in a way that lets you do it rapidly. And hopefully the Al-Sheikh opens the thing. But to me, right, the other really interesting is that the Al-Sheikh asks a series of literary questions, in the middle of which, though, he also asks a substantive question, which is, where do you ever get this idea? I know that's a question that we should be asking ourselves, right, on two levels. Where do you get the ideas? The Al-Sheikh tends to ask, where do you get the ideas only these things? And we do have to ask ourselves the question, why are images forbidden? And is there any hint in halacha, right? Now, and we talk about the question why images are forbidden, so we can do it by saying, let's try and figure out based on the sugya why images are forbidden. Or we could come in with philosophic presuppositions as we do about the ideas of angels.
So why can't we just say that the Al-Sheikh is from the sugya because we have later in the sugya Ofanim Sofim? It's all examples, so...
Do we know what they look like?
Does he say that...
It says, It seems to think there's other chayos, too.
Yeah, there are... Well, maybe there are other things in the sky. I mean, the Gemara clearly seems to say that there are these other things in the sky that you can't make.
We don't know what they look like. Right.
But why does that matter? I mean, why does...
Because Abaye banned the Dalek Chayot because he thinks those are the only things that we know what they look like, apparently. And Al-Sheikh says, the Dalek Chayot are no different than the other Chayot, and we know what the other Chayot look like, so why... Right, that's his question. Right, he assumes that we know that there are other Chayot in Shemayim and that we know what they look like, so we could copy them, too.
Why are we assuming that we know what they look like?
So that's what he says, because otherwise his question doesn't make sense. We don't know what they look like. How could we ban making copies of them? We couldn't. We don't know what the copies look like.
I mean, the Gemara clearly seems to say later that they are banned.
Yeah. The Al-Sheikh is interested in the Havamina. The Al-Sheikh thinks nobody could have had the Havamina only these 4 Chayot or Asr because we know what other Chayot look like, and right. And what sense does this make? Right, so I need to go pick up the Chayim. So the closing peroration, which may or may not be a redundancy. Peroration could either mean the closing oration or just the inspirational thing. Look it up because Elliot Salinger uses it in his article. just as you need presuppositions about what angels look like and what God does or does not look like and what, in order to read this sugya, it's also possible to come to the sugya with a theory about what should and should not happen with images. You can start off with a deep suspicion of images and say images, Judaism is opposed to the visual. Right, one of my friends just emailed me saying, I've always thought that Judaism, right, that's the vision of the artless Jew. You can start off with the presupposition that Judaism makes the visual so holy that we have a suspicion of any type of any attempt to concretize the visual. Right, you can say that we're opposed to imagination or we're opposed to the limit of imagination. Right, when Chava Evans comes on Wednesday, so she'll talk to you the difference between...
Who's Chava Evans?
She's a friend of mine who's an artist who's coming to lecture with us on Wednesday about her experience. You'll see that one of the things she talked about with Liberty was whether you see a painting as an artist or as a wall or a window. And she thinks that changed because of three-dimensional modeling, where it used to be that paintings opened up perspective, and now anything flat limits perspective, and you see it as constraining. That if you go to galleries, people used to look at there and say, oh, look, the room is so much bigger, and now people try to walk around the painting because they're not used to it, right? Because they see it as limiting to see something only when only right. So that's right. So all sorts of your perspectives on what images accomplish. And we talked about on Shabbos briefly under my breath. I don't know if you heard it, but that the whole notion of what it means to be a copy was altered by photography, the famous mm-hmm. essay talking about what does it mean to have a copy of a photograph.
What's the name of that essay?
Walter Pater, I don't remember what the name of it is. Right, so that's a... So it may be that in order to approach the sugya, you need to start with, the interpretation of the sugya is always going to be driven by prior assumptions about what kind of images should be permitted, what kind of images should be forbidden, and why. And you should, right, Rabbi Fender has a fascinating claim, right? But, you know, if you took Rabbi Fender's Bar Torah l'halacha, you would say that images should be usur when they attempt to make you believe that the image can be as real as the original. But any image that undermines itself should be mutter, right? Because that's exactly the whole point, right? What could be more opposed to avodah zarah, right, than an image that constantly reminds you that it's only a copy, right? So we would all end up saying that, you know. So he was.
So if you made an Ashtarti idol that says
this is not an idol.
Ashtarti.
Maybe, right? You know, I don't know how.
Reminds itself.
I don't know how you would play. You know, I don't know how you played it out. You know, he knows much, much more about. And you know, what I finally got was a little bit of what Cubism was doing. It's really very cool. But I don't know enough much. I don't know that much about it. So I want you to start thinking. Now, then it's right. So at two stages of the question. One question is, in order to interpret this sugya, do you need to come with a literary theory, with an image theory, a visual art theory? The second question, which is a more complicated question, I think, is even if one's understanding, I need to go. Even if one's understanding of the sugya, even if one's understanding of the, even if one's, no, they need to be liberated, so make sure it's me. But,
you need to have left 3 minutes ago, so I'm going
to. Even if one's understanding of the sugya changes based on literary theory, is it a good idea to make halacha depend on your literary theory, and say that somebody else, what's usur and mutter for somebody else, that's usur, even though you think it makes perfect sense according to your literary theory, but I paskin like Kibbutzim, so that's usur. Or do we want to define halacha in such a way that it is compatible with as many different reasonable literary artistic theories as possible?
What do you mean by artistic theory?
Theories of what an image accomplishes.
Okay.
Right. Okay, now I'm going to beat it to the parking lot. You're welcome. See you guys in a few minutes.